When it comes to setting priorities for managing the supply chain, executives can't have it all. But what is it that they really need? Hi, everybody. I'm Bob Bowman, Editor-in-Chief of Supply Chain Brain. And this is the Supply Chain Brain Podcast. The management priorities of supply chain executives are constantly changing in response to shifting conditions in the real world. On paper, everything seems important these days. In addition to the obvious objective of reducing cost, there's a desire to improve customer service, increase flexibility, resilience, and speed, embed digital technology, pursue sustainability, and maintain overall quality. All of those wants are included in a new executive survey by Bain & Company, and the findings of this latest one, in comparison with 3 years ago, is instructive. For one thing, cost is no longer quite as big a consideration, being set aside in favor of the need for flexibility to adjust whatever disruption or change in markets happen to come down the pike. On this episode, we delve into the modern-day executive mindset with the help of Hernan Science, Global Head of Performance Improvement and a member of the board of Bain & Company. We learn about how supply chains are navigating this age of turbulence and the need for a higher level of customer service. Supply chains, he says, are now a CEO problem. Here's my conversation with Hernan Science. Hernan Science, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bob. Delighted to be here.
We're talking about the latest survey from Bain & Company about supply chain priorities. Is this new? When did this come out and what period of time does it cover?
We've been surveying our supply chain clients and leaders of operations organizations over the last 3 to 4 years since we started having some of the hiccups associated with COVID. This last survey was a 2023 survey. And it was looking back at what we had experienced over 5 years and attempting to look forward at what folks are thinking about in terms of next steps, next few years, et cetera.
Who were you talking to in terms of company titles?
Very often we're working with the chief operations officer of a company. For very large companies, we also try to talk to the chief supply chain officer, sometimes the chief manufacturing officer when there's a large network of plants. And even the chief procurement officer when there is a very large part of the value add of an organization.
Well, we certainly include procurement in our definition of supply chain, so that would definitely be relevant. So the idea here is that there are a number of priorities. You're asking them to assess what's important to them then and now. How many choices do you give them in terms of corporate priorities?
Well, first of all, we provide them between 5 or 8 in terms of what they might be optimizing for or prioritizing at any point in time. We also, in the survey, allow for them, the respondent, to actually add categories.
And do they tend to add categories, or does your 8 pretty much cover it?
The good news, since we work with many operations organizations, is we do understand what's on the agenda, on the dashboards, what's being measured, what's being reported. So typically, there's not a lot of addition. We do get lots of understanding of how are goals evolving, how are they changing, what priorities are becoming slightly more important versus less important. That we get a lot of data on.
Let me run by what appears to be 8 priorities that you do address. Increase flexibility, increase resilience, increase speed, embed digital and technology, sustainability, reduce cost, improve customer service, and quality. Now, I would think that the ideal answer for a company would be yes to all of the above. But unfortunately, hard, cold reality intrudes, and you can't do all of that equally, right? And that's a lesson I think we're going to be talking about here from this survey. So where did you see the biggest jumps in priority, the biggest changes over like from three years ago in this new survey?
Exactly. The number one place where we have seen a jump is increased flexibility. It went up by a significant amount of points. Folks were looking at the last 3 years versus the next 3 years. I believe what happened is that the level of turbulence that is hitting these supply chains is just continues to increase. All of us saw COVID and we understand what COVID happened. And many folks said, well, maybe COVID is a one-time event. And what we've seen since then, right, is that, no, actually, this type of turbulence hitting the supply chain is not a one-time event. We see armed conflicts in the world that create issues for supply chains. We see transportation issues, both in terms of the ships and the boats, as well as the trucks and the number of drivers available to do that. We see geopolitical statements, think about Brexit, et cetera. The shocks just keep on happening. And when you're used to running something close to a just-in-time system, those are based on the ability to predict and to have a relatively stable performance based on your predictions. Mm-hmm. And when you start seeing that go away, well, then you start sort of saying, oh my God, I'm actually going to need more flexibility. The supplier set that I have is too small, and I'm going to need a little bit more of that. Maybe I need alternative transportation capacity. Maybe I need manufacturing in a couple of places versus one place. That's probably what's driving that increase in the relative priority of flexibility.
It's interesting that the top three, it seems to be, in terms of increasing in priority, increased flexibility, increased resilience, and increased speed, all are kind of variations on the same thing, aren't they? Better adjusting to the world as it is.
Exactly right. Exactly right. In a world where you would have had perfect forecasting, none of those are that important, right? Because no. I could forecast exactly how long it would take for a supply chain to do something, and I would actually adjust my orders based on the speed that I wanted. I would also set up the optimal configuration of my supply chain, assuming that there's actually no surprises. Mm-hmm. And it's when you create surprises that you say, oh, now I need to get better at certain things. How am I better at resilience? Is that enabled through flexibility? How do I increase the response time, the speed of my supply chain, if not everything goes right, and therefore I have to accelerate?
Did we ever have perfect forecasting with no surprises? I don't think supply chains have ever experienced that, have they?
What we had was far less events and far less events of the magnitude that we're experiencing. So yes, of course, we had delays. We had things happening inside one country that created a particular delay in that country, etc. But if you think about the last 10 to 15 years, two things happen at the same time. We actually got better and better and better at running the derivative of just-in-time models, just incredibly well-tuned supply chains that would deliver very low unit costs. And we had stability. And then all of a sudden, we created, or the world came with lack of instability, turbulence of all types. It is the confluence of those two things that just has added massive complexity. We always had something arrive late. You've experienced it as a customer. B2B customers have experienced it themselves, et cetera. But fill rates were relatively high. And we all took pride in our supply chains that the fill rates were really high. I mean, the notion of I literally don't have my product and I cannot tell you when I'll have it.
And customers don't tolerate that kind of answer anymore about we don't know where it is. You'll get it when you get it. That sort of thing just
exactly.
Doesn't fly anymore. So I can understand where customer service comes in, even though there is a slight dip in expectations of improving customer service in the next 3 years. It went from 28% in the last 3 years to 26% in the next three. That seems like a little bit of contradiction when you're thinking about all the other stuff about flexibility, resilience, and speed.
I think it has to do with a realization, it's two factors, Bob. A realization, realism, right, that no matter how much we try to make these things work, we are actually going to be hit by things we didn't expect. Let's actually set expectations. But the other thing that may be happening is what's actually really rising really fast is customer expectations. In some ways, I like to say, for shorthand, that we've all been Amazonized. We are used to getting a personalized service very quickly. If you live in a large U.S. city, within hours. And that personal service, I think, has changed everyone's expectations of what good service is. And so this may also be a realization, right, that relative to customer expectations, right, a supply chain that is not completely prepared to be personalized will hit slightly lower service ratings.
You talked about talking to different titles within an organization. And I would imagine that the answers that you get from a particular title is based on their own perspective, whether it's procurement, whether it's supply chain, whether it's COO, or for that matter, finance. I'm wondering if this sets up the possibility of clashing priorities within the C-suite. Who's the ultimate decider? Maybe you'd get different answers from different people in the C-suite, depending on who you asked. Do you take that into consideration?
I think, Bob, that this is true almost in every company today. And that predictor, or let me call it better, competing guidance, may even come from the same team or person. So at some point in time, right, you're a senior executive, you are looking at your cost structure, you look at the cost structure of your competitor, the competitor is looking better, you might at that point in time call your operations team and say, what can we do? What can we do to reduce costs, to make the operation more efficient? And typically, right, that might mean reducing the number of suppliers, shutting down or more fully utilizing the existing manufacturing capacity, et cetera. And then we have a hit. A given canal in the world was not allowing ships to move as quickly, or a climatic event.
Or
a climatic event delayed dramatically my goods. And the analysts and the board of directors calls me and says, what are you thinking? Like, you need more resilience. Go build the resilience. Well, I mean, at that point in time, I'm going to call the operations team and say, oh, my God, like, what do we do? Like, we need to be prepared for moments like this. Can we have more inventory in certain places? Where do we need to add alternative capacity that we can call upon? And, of course, the operations person is going to say, well, this conversation and the last conversation compete. This is what's so hard, Bob, because it's not just resilience and costs, but it's also, as we discussed, customer service. And now there's also ESG and the many different incarnations of ESG. Mm-hmm. So I'm also expected as a firm to be far more green. And by that, I mean more decarbonized. I'm also expected to actually produce far less waste than in the past. And that adds yet another variable. And so as legislation is passed through, probably starting with Western Europe, but it'll probably hit most of the world at some point in time, then we just added yet one more, right? And I think what's really hard for supply teams is that they are working against a set of priorities with the tools and visibility and org structure of a different era. So we have tools, processes, people, metrics, et cetera, for an era of economic order quantity. We know incredibly well how to manage inventory so that we can both have relatively good asset utilization, but at the same time have good service. And the data's coming in that way. Our ERPs or ET or IT systems are helping us do that way. The dashboards we've had are operating that way. We've hired people with those skills or trained them that way. And then in a relatively short period of time, we've basically said, no, I need you to actually reoptimize and balance across a much more complex set of metrics, a much more complex set of variables. But do we have those dashboards super clearly? Do we have that data coming in into one dashboard? Do we have guidance coming on how to make those trade-offs? Not consistently, Bob.
Well, I can see why you say that this is the supply chains are now a CEO level problem, because you need that single voice that marches the company in the same direction, even though you may have conflicting priorities and disagreements among other members of the C-suite. The CEO has to lead in that direction, right?
Exactly right. I mean, look, the supply chain has always been an important part of the CEO's job. As a CEO, you need to make sure that the quality and safety of everything you do is exceptional. And also, you want to make sure that you have hired a team, in the past at least, that knew how to run a very efficient operation from a cost perspective and from an asset perspective, while still providing exceptional fill rates and customer service. And in a simpler world, and where we had tools and frameworks like economic order quantity, that was working very well. But now, it is more complex. Resilience is very expensive, right? It's easy to say, well, go from N vendors to more than N vendors. Go from N transportation providers to more than N. Expand your manufacturing capacity. Put it in different countries. Very easy to say. And it does help resilience. It's super expensive.
Every one of those steps involves extra money.
Exactly. And you can become the role model for resilience and cost yourself out of business.
But here's what I'm wondering, Hernan. You're saying that we are indeed in a world of surprises, of unpredictability, of not being able to clearly see the future. And yet here you have a bunch of executives that seem to be confident about what they're going to be emphasizing over the next 3 years. Now, 3 years can be an eternity, depending on what happens in the next 3 years. Is it not possible that these priorities could just go completely out the door and suddenly cost is number one in the event of like a recession, larger scale war? It could just change the whole game plan, could it not?
Yes. And let me tell you what gives me optimism. What gives me optimism is that the right set of variables are now in the dashboard. Mm. And you are absolutely right, Bob, that we may need to change the priorities depending on what's happening in the global economy, given what's happening in a given market or region of the world. But at least what I am seeing is folks saying, all right, I have just a bigger dashboard with more indicators and harder trade-offs to make, and companies are starting to make a motion in that direction. And that gives me a lot of optimism, because otherwise what you have is you have a dashboard that is often changing in which variables are being considered. Where I hope that the world goes, where I hope that our entire sort of operations field goes, is it is going to be a larger, more complex dashboard, but we know what it is. And we get better and better at making the balancing trade-offs.
Good advice. I wonder if that's reflected, though, in the actual thinking of some of the executives that you talk to, because here we're talking about embed technology, digital and technology. Those are dashboards, right? That's what we're talking about. And yet only 21% of your survey says that they expect to increase that in priority in the next 3 years. Doesn't that seem like a little low in terms of what they actually need to be doing?
Yeah, the optimistic guy would say they almost doubled how important they thought it was. And the questioning, I would say, oh, but that's still very low. And I think you're pointing to something very important, Bob. And let me talk about it. If we were having a technology conversation today, the first thing people would ask about is like, oh, are you talking about generative AI? And I'm very excited about generative AI. But let me tell you, I believe that operations executives have not invested enough in what I am going to call digital traceability. We've had some conversations about digital twins, et cetera. But honestly, I can't imagine a world 10 years from now where leading companies don't have extraordinary visibility of what's happening inside of their four walls, upstream with multiple tiers of suppliers, and downstream with distributors, dealers, retailers, etc. In Western Europe, you may have what's called an extended producer responsibility requirement, which means you actually need to know and take care of the product you produced, even after somebody bought it. I think that this is one of the biggest areas of underinvestment. One of the things that we talk to our clients about, that we have been working with our leading clients on, is creating fully traceable supply chains. By the way, during COVID, one of the things we did is we surveyed a large number of companies in the United States and in Western Europe and asked the question, what is your current visibility of tier two? I know you talk to tier one, but talk to me about tier two, because a lot of your problems are coming from the tier two angle. There was less than 15%, 15% visibility. That is, I mean, we cannot operate in a world like that. Again, in a very stable world, yes, we are not in a very stable world.
Okay, yes. Hernan, so taking this all into account on the assumption that you can't have it all in terms of equally prioritizing these eight categories or even more than that, what then is your advice to companies and executives as to how to proceed in terms of what they need to do to achieve these goals and to create this new look of a supply chain?
I think three out of the four recommendations we've discussed, I will talk about them briefly, and I'll give you a fourth one. The first three we've talked about. Number one, have a dashboard with all of the relevant variables so that you know what you're optimizing against. Number two, build in the right data visibility and traceability so that you have as much data to make these trade-offs. Number three, we also talked about work with the leadership team to get guidance of how do we want to make these trade-offs? Where are we going to go better versus where are we going to go less good? But the fourth piece that I really want to talk about is this is an end-to-end problem. This cannot be solved by an R&D team, a procurement team, a supply chain team, a manufacturing team, and a logistics team working separately. And we have had, during the just-in-time era, extraordinary functional excellence in our operations functions. This is not a vertical time in our history as an operations leaders. This is a horizontal time. We need to think about the end-to-end process. So my biggest piece of advice is, if you have the dashboards, if you have the data, if you have the guidance, start operating in a much more cross-functional end-to-end way, because then you will have more degrees of freedom to solve what is actually a very complicated problem.
Hernan Saenz, I want to thank you so much for joining me to deliver this dose of reality, this idea that companies indeed can't have it all, but this is what they really should be prioritizing in terms of creating an effective supply chain of the future. Thank you for being with me today.
Truly a pleasure, Bob. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was my conversation with Hernan Saenz of Bain & Company, talking about the changing priorities of supply chain executives. We're online at www.supplychainbrain.com, where we post a new episode of this podcast for streaming or downloading every Friday. You can also read our Think Tank blog, watch thousands of videos, and access all of our other content, including the digital edition of our magazine. Look for us on Facebook and LinkedIn. Follow us on X at @scbrain, and also watch videos on our YouTube channel. You can also download or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Got any comments or suggestions on this or any episode? Email me at rbowman@supplychainbrain.com. Stay well, and see you next time.